Once in a lifetime, a film tells a story of unrivaled endeavor and resilience. A story of a boy that thought he couldn't jump. Until one day, a man had the inspiration to show him he could.
Oh, strength, Kingy. We'll get at the fifth tackle and kick across field. And all you need to do is light.
But I just want to play me music on me decks, Mr. Pratt.
Nonsense. Warren and the players group need you.
A story of courage. A story about a bang average number 18 that would rise above all his critics. A boy that would train until his heart bled primrose and blue.
I can't get off the ground.
Jump, Toby. Jump. Oh, let's try that again. This time without the stepladder.
Yes, coming to a cinema near you, once they reopen, if they ever do. One coach, one boy, and one desperate and repetitious last tackle play. Starring Steve Price as the coach.
Frizzly, hold the fucking stepladder.
Toby King, the centre with a fifth tackle purpose, and nominated for a BAFTA, a Palme d'Or, a Golden Globe, and winner of New Best Flat-Footed Actor at the Real Sun Centre Film Festival.
Again, Holland has so much pressure, and this time it's caught by King! He makes a speciality of that! He's done that so often, but to do it in a semi-final, wow, that's special! Up he went, and down he came with glory in his arms!
A movie of a lifetime. The King's Reach. Coming soon, possibly.
Can I come down now, Mr. Price? It's quite high up here.
Coming up on the show, it's not overcast on the podcast as we're joined by a ray of sunshine. Can Sam find any stats not based around computer games? A picture's worth a thousand words. We take a psychological view at a player's Instagram. We reflect on 25 years of Super League. There's your lockdown letters, a quiz to test relations, and board games too. And just how good is Steve Price's memory? Or have we gone a generation too far? This is What Would Brian Bevan Say? Hello, I'm Rob London, and yes, we're back for another podcast that's void of any action-packed rugby league. But that's not stopping us, as just like the British Empire, the sun never sets on What Would Brian Bevan Say? So, welcoming my first ray of sunshine, and just like the Earth orbits the sun, we too orbit his every statistical word. Yes, the star of the show, with a chemical podcasting compound of 70% hydrogen, 28% helium, 1.5% nitrogen and oxygen with small amounts of neon, iron, silicon, magnesium and sulfur. Although all these gases pale into insignificance in comparison to his statistical gas, blows out of his arse when he rants on about Ben Curry, it's Sam Hilliard-Sankey.
I'm not quite sure whether that's a compliment or not. Hello, Robert. It's been a good week in the Sankey household. I've not yet been banished to the shed. Oh. Although today I've managed to paint six fence panels, so rock and roll over here.
Jesus.
But with us also, he may not be the brightest star in the sky, and some would say if there is a solar eclipse, he's probably providing the darkness. Yes, with his tackle bags not letting light escape, such is the magnitude of his psychological mass that draws on all our patience. It's Dennis Blackall-Waywell.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, that's... I've not done anything on quantum physics as yet, but I include that in tackle bags. I was thinking, what could... be the energy source for the hooker, and then I thought, oh, a Daryl Quark.
It's very good, Dennis.
It's not bad for me, is it?
Yeah. I'm finishing our asterism, and yes, that is the collective noun for stars. A journalist that possesses more rugby league facts, stories, and insight that, if all told at once, has the equivalence of two electrons encompassing a nucleus of two protons. Yes, our very own nuclear sun from the Sun newspaper, sports journalist Gary Fusion Carter.
Hi there, are you okay? I'm a bit concerned that you said I was brilliant in the week. Will you accept slightly above average with the occasional dose of mediocre?
We'll accept that, Gary. No problem at all, mate. How are you doing down there?
The one thing it has made me realise all this is how much I actually spent at coffee shops, which was a frightening amount.
But you, I mean, you've got plenty of stories still to write about, Gary, haven't you? I mean, it doesn't really change. I mean, there's no action on the park, but nevertheless, people are coming out with all these statements, etc.
Yeah, there's a lot of statements. I mean, people want to make statements for making statements' sake, I think, at the minute, and then people want to make statements to respond to previous statements, and then there's another response, and then another response. So essentially, for me, work-wise, there's not much change. It's like ring people. The only difference is it's done over, say, Zoom or FaceTime or whatever, rather than face-to-face.
And do you think with that now, I mean, we've noticed this technology at work as well. We've all sort of gone, oh, actually, I could just do this over the phone. I don't need to drive down the M62 for 3 hours. Do you think maybe going forward, when we've got all this behind us, possibly this could be the future for you, Gary, sitting in front of your computer on Zoom?
I think more clubs will do press conferences by Zoom or what have you, but for me, there's no substitute to actually being at a game to do a report.
Smelling the thighs, the wintergreen on the thighs and all that kind of...
Looking the coach in the eye.
That's what you want to do. Good one, Dennis. Yeah. Good one. Now, you're a Salford fan, mate, aren't you? That's sort of where your upbringing starts.
I'm actually Manchester born and bred, but obviously Salford was the nearest Super League team, nearest rugby league team to where I'm from. And then my dad used to work down the road from the Willow, so that only sort of cemented me like fondness of Salford even more, really.
So are you red or blue?
Neither.
Right, okay. Ooh. Rochdale?
Oh, Stockport.
Well, Stockport's Cheshire. It's not Manchester, it's Cheshire Stockport, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
He is south of the river then, isn't he? That's what
he
it is.
He is, south of the river.
See, our term for south of the river is that, you see, these two boys live south of the river. They're the posh side of Warrington, whereas I live north of the river.
And, well, you did. You did live south. North of it. You don't live north of the river anymore, do you?
No, not quite, no.
Well, let's talk about some action then, because I know the action has finished, but I think we should go back to what was a brilliant game, and that was, well, maybe not for Gary, but was the Super League final last year. Looking back on that game now, Gary, you were so close, mate, so close to getting it. There was sort of a turning point in that game, possibly where you thought, oh, Salford have got the momentum and things might go their way. Looking back on it, were there any moments in that game that you thought, if only that had happened?
To be honest with you, no. I mean, just walking up and say, well, I actually wrote my introduction after the Wigan game. Is 6 words you thought you'd never write. Salford are at the grand final.
But was that it? Were you happy with that? Was that kind of, you were there, that was your party, it didn't really matter whether you won or lose?
Personally, yeah, I was very much just sort of happy we made it. And the main thing was we didn't get hammered by St. Helens like 40 or 50, which was the fear, because St. Helens were deserved winners at the end of the day. And no one could argue that St. Helens didn't deserve to win.
I thought there was two bits, actually, Gary. I agree that over the 80 minutes, Saints were worthy winners. But there was two items. Lola here had the disallowed try, which was correct, but it could have gone a bit differently. And then I can't remember who it was. You were on Saints' line, piling on the pressure, and there was a play the ball, and you were penalised for an incorrect play the ball when there was two St. Helens men all over your player. And I just feel that you were just coming back into the game then.
Yes.
And you got a bum call.
Was that early in the second half?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it was Ken Seal, I think, in the far corner from where I was in the press box. But yeah, I mean, having looked at that, it was a debatable call. But in the grand scheme of things, the best team won, so.
Oh, yeah.
There was, I mean, in both finals last year, there was those little moments that possibly where referees should have gone to the big screen. We had the final Warrington versus Saints, which was probably even the bigger call. Yes. I think he got that ball down, and I think it was Robert Hicks, was it, on the day that didn't go to...
No, didn't read it in the paper. He didn't get it down.
Oh, here we go. Here he is. Primrose and Blue over there. And then there was the lower here that you mentioned that, okay, clearly wasn't a try. But in circumstances like that, do you have much access to the referees, Gary? Can you go to a referee after the game and say, why didn't you go to the big screen?
Not specifically, no. I mean, the attitude is normally, unless it was something sensational, I must admit, the last time I sort of fronted a referee up as to why something happened was when Justin Carney got sent off for Salford, and I was told it was for racist abuse of, I think it was Ryan Bailey while I was at Toronto. So I asked the referee as he walked past, and he sort of said, yeah. And that was the last time I did it. But a lot of the time, it's like, yes, it's controversial calls, but if you're going to ask a referee about controversial calls in every game, you'd be there for 4 hours.
I think you're right in a way that if it's blatant and massively wrong, it's fair enough. But if it's a debatable call, then they're trying to make it at 100 mile an hour and see it once, not see it 5 times on a replay like we do, don't they?
Yes, of course. And the big call that stands out for me is, remember the England-Tonga Rugby League World Cup semi-final?
Yeah.
The knock-on call at the very end on Andrew Fifita, the match had been made.
Yeah, pulled the ball out.
No one asked him afterwards as to why he made the decision.
I think it was the right call in that Tonga England game.
Yes, it was. It was a loose carry, wasn't it, he deemed it as?
Yeah. But boy, he had some balls, didn't he, to call that. You know, when you're over in Tonga, I mean, I think the video ref was an English lad, wasn't it? I think it was...
Was it Chris Kendall?
It could well have been. There was, and that would have been... I mean, I think he did him a world of good not going to the video ref, because had he gone to the ref, you'd then got an Englishman making a decision on putting England in the World Cup final. It's never easy at Salford, Gary, because, you know, clearly teams come along and start pinching your players, and with everything that's gone on in the background... With Kukash as well. You had, what I can see here, you've had 8 players leave the club this year and you've brought in 12.
Yeah.
Yet you still carry on. It doesn't seem to make any difference. You're still, you know, a force to be reckoned with. What's the secret at Salford?
For me, the secret at Salford is Ian Watson. If Salford lose him, that'd be huge. That'd be massive, massive blow if Watson leaves Salford. But I mean, I was chatting to Ian the other day, actually, and he says that Salford wants to get out of the cycle of having to change 8 or 10 players every year. Mm. They want to get in a cycle where it's not 3 or 4, so you're not starting with a whole new team. Because that's one of the reasons why Salford made a slow start to this season. New players getting used to each other, too many of them.
They've clearly pointed out what the issue is, that they need to stop it. What is the way of stopping it? Do they have the answer to that?
I think it's one of these things that takes a few years. It's basically signing players on longer-term contracts. Because I chatted to Ian the other day and he said that they're in that situation again whereby they've got a lot of players off contract at the end of the year, including Niall Evolt, who's a big one, and Joey Lussick, who's another big one. Now, they've actually offered Niall another deal, and I think they're going to offer Joey another deal as well. But I think it's about another 10 or 12 off contract again at the end of the year. And they sort of want to get in a situation where the sort of only, maximum sort of half a dozen.
Mm. Mm. And are they using their marquee signings? I mean, are you in that sort of magnitude of salaries, or are you sitting below that?
Not yet. The hope is that they will do, but it all depends on how many people come through the door.
So their only revenue at the moment is purely just bums on seats. That's the way it works.
Bums on seats and sponsorship, basically.
The way you're talking about Ian Watson there, just sort of put him in the same bracket as Darryl Powell over at Castleford, that a man who is getting more out of a bunch of players who not necessarily have been rejected at other clubs, but maybe slight misfits, and he gets the best out of them.
Yeah, I mean, again, just look at the way Dan Sargeston started this season. At Wigan, he was a player who was basically, he does all right. Now at Salford, he swapped sides over, and now he's working under Ian Watson. He's probably been their best player of the season so far. And he's back in the England squad.
And he couldn't even get a run at the Gold Coast, could he, I don't think?
No, I don't think Dan's NRL stint was the happiest, to be honest with you.
Okay, fair enough. I was over in the UK last year, Gary, and I got to see the Warrington Salford game. My old man was there. He's 88 now, but he just clearly said that Salford do all the basics right. You could see the structure on the field during that 80 minutes. They knew what they needed to do. They had a big bunch of dirty forwards that put the ball up their jumper. And then when they got into the right positions, Hastings just kicked us to death. That's all coming from Watson, is it? That basic training of just putting the foundation into place that seems so easy to do that other clubs can't do, he seems to be achieving at Salford.
Yes, I mean, there is another factor as well into how Salford did so well last year, is that they didn't have many injuries last year at all, and a lot of that is down to the condition of a guy called Greg Brown. But no, yeah. I mean, all the structure of play and everything is all from Ian Watson. And before he left, Martin Gleeson had a much bigger role than many sort of put credit in him for, including me.
And was Gleeson doing defensive work, or was he doing both, attack and defence?
I think the way Salford are, they've only got, I think it's six backroom staff. I don't think they can have a specialist in anything, to be honest with you.
Gee, I'll tell you what. Well, one player that I really do rate at Salford, and I think possibly is the best second row forward in Britain at the moment, and that's Josh Jones. How much of a loss has it been to lose him? No, I'm just saying out the eight that have gone, he's the one that I think is more of a player that you've lost than Hastings in some regard.
Yeah, with Jackson, I mean, it was almost like the finishing touches to what the groundwork they've been put in by the likes of Josh Jones. But losing Josh was a real big blow. But when Hull come calling with their mega millions or whatever, it was obvious what was going to happen.
So just sort of to get an idea of the difference in salary here, I mean, what percentage of salary has Josh Jones increased by when he's going to Hull? I mean, does he double his salary overnight? I mean, where is he at with that?
I'm not entirely sure. I think it's a hefty raise he's had. Right. I'm not quite sure what he was on at Salford, so I can't really compare, to be honest with you.
Okay. And Hastings, he's still to sort of fire at Wigan. I know he's slowly starting to progress into that team and coming to the fore. Do you see him there long term? I mean, there seems to be rumours now that possibly he's going to go off to Rugby Union.
In a short answer, no. I don't see him being there perhaps longer than this year, to be honest with you. He's definitely got this NRL release clause. And if any NRL club shows an interest or wants him, I think he'll go.
The thing with the NRL, though, is it's almost like you only get one chance, Gary, I think. They've got such an abundance of talent. I mean, I was down not that long ago watching Beacon Hill on the Northern Beaches. I reckon there's 10 lads playing at Beacon Hill that could comfortably play in Super League. It's just such a conveyor belt that maybe they see Hastings possibly as just he's a bit of a liability, he's a gamble to take, you know, a go on getting back into the NRL.
Taking a gamble on Jackson would be a massive gamble, but I mean, a lot depends on how Jackson does later on in the season. I mean, it was clearly going to take time for him to settle in with new players and a new way of playing and a new coach. So I think it's the key thing to judge is if we ever get to the end of the season, judge him then.
Well, it's turning into the Salford podcast, isn't it?
We'll rename it. Yeah.
I know. I've not done any analysis on Salford.
And now Salford is skint and doing far better than he should do.
I know. Well, I tell you what, value for money, I have to say, you're getting far better value for money than we are at Warrington.
All right, well, moving away from Salford, Garen, we should probably talk about Warrington. We're on the What Would Brian Bevan Say podcast. You've been following them, obviously, for a long, long time there over at the Sun newspaper. First of all, do you think there was an opportunity that got away under Tony Smith? We got to those grand finals. We should have won one of them, shouldn't we? There was possibly egos in the background that stopped Brett Hodgson playing in one of those finals. Do you think we really missed the boat there? Do you think we should have won one of them?
Put it this way, for the amount you've spent and the amount you bring in and add to the game, you perhaps should have won one by what you've done and what you've built and who you've brought in. Grand finals are strange games, really. You don't necessarily have to be the best team to win a grand final. You could be the best team to get there, but then not perform on the day, as St Helens found at the Challenge Cup final. But
yeah.
Do you think Warrington perhaps had a better chance than many in 2013, I think it was? I'm trying to remember now. Yeah, it was 13.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It all becomes a bit of a blur, really. All those finals blend into one. There must have been significant moments in that finals, plural, when we should have won. One thing I think that's not brought into play as much in Super League is that grand final is played in October. I remember Sean Long saying he said he didn't like playing at Old Trafford because not only was it cold, not only was it wet, but also the Old Trafford ground staff put the sprinklers on 10 minutes before kickoff as well. So it's not conducive for playing that free-flowing pub football that you might see at the Challenge Cup final. Do you think teams like Wigan have really sort of benefited from that? They're very much, you know, up the middle. They've got that grapple tackle going. It suits them on in October at the grand final.
For me, the best games, perhaps not the best to watch, the best games are the low-scoring ones. I mean, look at the World Cup final, 6-0. Yeah. That was it. I mean, the low-scoring games are often the better ones, but Wembley water the pitch like anything. It's just that in August, normally, it's scorching hot, so it dries out a lot quicker.
Yeah, yeah, makes a difference. Well, a couple of players that have come through our doors at Warrington have been Salford boys, and that's Stephen Ratchford and Richie Myler. Now we've got a Matty Ashton in the team. It started to get to the work out where all the jigsaw puzzle pieces need to go, because we only need one fullback. I'm almost of the opinion that either Matty Ashton or Ratchford has to slip into the centre position. I think Ashton could make a centre possibly. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's funny you mention Stephen. Me and him have a little joke going. I've asked Stephen several times, which shirts do you want to wear now? He's always said to me he wants to wear numbers 8 and 10 because they're the only ones he's never worn. I've seen him play pretty much everywhere for Salford, including centres. I mean, personally, I'd probably go Ratchford at centre, but if I'm honest, I'd have Ratchford as England's fullback.
But he had an absolute shocker against the pub team in Perth, didn't he, leading into the World Cup? And that was kind of it with Bennett, wasn't it? Bennett didn't take another look at him. Was he on the wing in that game, possibly? But he didn't have the best of games.
In the warm-up game?
Yeah, the one in Perth. I think he knocked on a couple of times, and that was kind of it for it for him in the World Cup.
Yeah, because he ended up playing Gareth Widdop at fullback, didn't he, for quite a bit?
Yeah.
All I want to say, Gary, is you're now my favourite sports journalist.
Because why? Yeah.
He's not mentioned Curry yet.
I've been talking about Steph Ratchford for the last 2 years to these two muppets.
Would you be? I'm of the opinion, Gary, that Ratchford doesn't make a good half, because he's almost a bit of what I call him a headless chicken. He's too elusive. He doesn't know what he's doing himself half the time. He doesn't quite have that structure. Whereas I think putting him in the centre is perfect for it, in and out, out and in.
He's also got the stature to play centre. He's a bigger lad than you think, Stefan. If you stand next to him, he's quite a bit taller than me. So, and I imagine he can lift a bit more than I can as well.
40% of his body mass comes from his nose, though, Gary. You need to realise that.
Oh, that's terrible.
I could have possibly called on that.
Okay, well, we should probably get on to Sam's pin-up boy, and that's Ben Curry. I don't think he's the player he was. And I mean, he's a terrific lad. I was at the Lebanon-Great Britain game, which I think you were at as well, Gary. I remember seeing you up there in the box looking a bit depressed.
Yes, it was freezing cold and plastic down.
Pissing it down, wasn't it, that day? The two players that came over and said hello to my daughter were James Graham and Ben Curry. He's a fantastic, fantastic character. He's wonderful. He's got a warm heart. Everything about Ben Curry is what you want in a rugby league player. But that knee injury or knees injuries, it's just lost in that yard of pace. I don't think he's quite where he is, and he's had to adapt his game a little bit.
I think the closest you saw Ben Curry back to being, for want of a better phrase, the old Ben Curry, was at the Hull game, where he made that one dash one way and then dash the other way. And the defensive one was more vital for me than the attacking one. And that showed to me that he's more back to what he was than anything, really.
Do you know that defensive effort that he put in, Gary, actually went down as a missed tackle against him?
That's nice, isn't it?
I know. He races back 40 yards. He stops the guy from scoring, but because he only put a hand on him and then dropped off, it's a missed tackle. I don't know.
Junior lessons in the rugby league yet?
Do you go off the stats much, Gary? Do you look at those stats sometimes and think, gee, that's not what happened on the park?
If I'm honest, no. As you could probably tell from reading my reports, but it's almost like these lies, damn lies and statistics, isn't it? I mean, you can make anyone sound good from stats, but the main thing is, does your team win?
Do you ever take an opinion on the Man of Steel points either?
No, I don't get a vote, to be honest with you.
No, I know you don't vote, but what do you agree with, like, you know, when they give those sort of accolades out?
The weekly ones, sometimes I do, yeah. I mean, the end result, I mean, for me, Jackson was the best player in the competition last year. So the right result came, but it was pretty obvious what was going to happen, because the moment the voting went dark was the moment Blake Austin got injured.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Mm. One player that I think really stands out this year is the lad over at Huddersfield, this Caesar guy, or as Dennis refers to him as, Cesar. We went back and looked at through his stats. His stats, in, you know, comparable to Blake Austin's at Canberra, he's by far the better player. He, to me, seems to be the real find in Super League this year, Gary.
I'm going to mention Salford again here. I was at the game against Huddersfield, and I mean, just on the when you're there at the game, sort of in the heat of sort of getting your report out and things like that, you sort of think, oh, well, maybe Salford should have won that. But then you watch it again, and you see what Aidan Caesar actually did. He basically won that game for Huddersfield, going both ways in attack and defence, because it was Caesar who pulled up the tackle in the corner, but Co into touch and saved the try. So he's showing these skills going both ways, which for me is the biggest thing.
You've made a few good points in particular there about
life. Thank you.
And then about Jackson Hastings and Aidan Caesar. I'm a big player of the fantasy leagues, and in the fantasy league, Josh Jones and for Warrington Jack Hughes, they're worth the weight in gold because they're doing tackle after tackle after tackle, carry after carry after carry. And sometimes it's hard to balance all the work that people do and the points they score in a fantasy league over maybe just three touches that Jackson Hastings might have, or Caesar, or Blake Austin. He might only enter the game for 3 moments, but create 3 tries.
The thing with Aidan Caesar as well, he's doing a lot of stuff that you don't immediately notice. Mm. Like me, I watched that Huddersfield game again, and you see Caesar doing a lot more than you actually thought he did at the time. You thought he did a fair bit at the time, but then you watch the game again, you see the little bits that he does that you perhaps don't notice, which for me is perhaps more impressive than the things you do notice immediately.
You mentioned in the heat of the moment when you're writing your headline in the last minute. Being that I'm a bit of an up-and-coming journalist as well, working my way through the ranks and things. At that particular point, do you know at that particular point what your question is going to be to the coach in the press office at the last minute?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, you mentioned writing it in the last minute. I mean, I don't write the headlines for a start, but basically, how things work on Thursday night and Friday night games, it's different on Sundays, obviously, because you've got time, but Thursday night, Friday night games, you have to send your report basically either as soon as the game finishes or sometimes even 5 minutes before the end, which is a bit of a nightmare when there's 1 or 2 points in it, because you send it, you know, you're just spending that last 5 minutes praying, basically. But, no, I've got a fair idea of what I'm going to ask, but a lot of the time it's like, it starts off with, say, what are your thoughts on that, and say the coach raises something else you can pick up on and things like that and develop a point. I mean, sometimes it's a fairly obvious sort of situation or a point or an incident in the game that happened. So it can come to you quite easily, to be honest with you. But sometimes it's like, what the bloody hell's just happened there?
Yeah.
Actually, you can probably tell when you read me reports.
And then your working week then, clearly, your Friday nights, your Saturday nights and your Sunday nights are all gone. They're sort of with rugby league. When do you get the time off, mate?
I don't, simply. What's time off? Because on Monday nights you have disciplinaries and stuff like that normally. Monday, Tuesday afternoons you have press conferences. Wednesdays you sometimes have press conferences as well. And Thursday night you've got games. Friday night you've got games. Saturdays I'll do football a lot of the time. Then do games on Sunday as well. So a lot of it's sort of organisational. Like say you're doing a press conference for a team that's playing on Thursday or Friday or what have you. You can sort of say speak to the coach if you want a piece for, say, Tuesday's paper for a Monday press conference. And then you can hold the player stuff back until, say, the day of the game, like Thursday or Friday. So you've got to be very organised, I think.
Yeah. Well, when you're working from home, what are your top tips for us? Because we're all working from home now.
when I work from home, what are my top tips? basically, do as much tidying up as you can, or else your missus will have a bright go at you.
You're about right.
Well, talking of press conferences, Gary, we've got our beloved Steve Price now at Warrington. For me, the jury's still out on this lad, because as you said at the start, you know, with Moran's money and everything else that comes into the club, the capacity of actually going on and winning Super League is surely there for the taking. What have you made of Price? I mean, he sort of struggled in the NRL towards the end, and lads that I know at work all laughed at me when we said we'd employed Steve Price. Where do you think he's at? Has he been a successful coach, or do you think he's sort of, his coaching career is on the line at Warrington still?
The one thing I've noticed about Steve is a real change in his mindset towards the media, because when he first started, he was very much of that NRL mindset, where it's almost like a mindset of, they're all out to get me, all out to pull me up. Whereas now he's sort of very amenable, like, we'll do stuff for you and we'll work with you. Whereas at the start, it was very, very guarded and didn't want to do this, didn't want to do that, or was reticent to do this, or reluctant to do that. Whereas that's broken down now, which is a lot better. You get a lot better working relationship with him. In terms of his coaching style, I mean, he's a far better coach than I'll ever be, so I can't criticise.
Yeah, I think I've helped to break those barriers down in the start of the season, Rob. <yeah.
laughs> Oh, dear. Justin Holbrook looks a little bit concerned already in the up there in the box at the Gold Coast. I have a funny feeling he might come back to Super League. I think maybe he might well be the next Warrington coach. So watch this space.
Really? Mm. Interesting. Yeah. Making it up. Gary, what's your biggest scoop out of your 20-year history, whatever, in sport or whatever?
Well, getting Sean Wayne as England coach the other week wasn't a bad one, I thought. I think the problem with breaking stories is you spend most of the day, it's actually published, going, oh, what if I'm wrong, what if I'm wrong, what if I'm wrong? Thankfully, it turned out all right. Thankfully.
Now, Gary, you must have more printed lines in the national press than any other journalist over there. You must be right bang number one. How hard is it to get those lines in the papers? Because clearly, I'm presuming that you're editing down to London. If you're writing about Wigan or Warrington or, you know, one of these northern provincial towns, clearly that doesn't sort of strike a pose with the people down there in London. Is it more about writing about Toronto, writing about Great Britain that gets the lines in the paper?
Well, for me, England should be everything, because England cuts through far more at a national newspaper desk in London than any other club. I mean, Toronto is a thing with a, you know, the curiosity factor still there with Toronto, and obviously Sonny Bill Williams, because people know about Sonny Bill as well. So, but no, I mean, for me, England should be everything, because you see a lot of, certainly from the Sun's point of view, I notice as well, I mean, I might be completely wrong here, but a lot of the rugby union stories you see get big shows are with players who play for England.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm. So for me, England should be everything.
And in regards to Toronto, I mean, probably should touch on them for a second. It been a bit of a cock-up possibly on their salary cap. They involved a lot of salaries in their structure before they even got to Super League, now that they're burdened with. The guy who's running Toronto, if he walks away, clearly that's the end of Toronto. Have you been over to Toronto, Gary? Have you sort of experienced the match day experience in Canada?
No, I haven't. I was hoping to get over for the whole game, which now, God knows when that's going to be, but they're still hoping that all the other 11 Super League teams will play in Toronto at some point. It's just as to when that point is.
I'm booked to go on the 2nd of July, but that's highly unlikely.
Well, they've just banned mass gatherings until the 30th of June, so you're still all right, just.
Yeah, and Sam, you might be the first person ever to go and watch Toronto that's actually paid for a ticket as well.
I might be, you're right. Well, at the minute, as we currently sit here, I've paid 1,800 quid to go and watch Toronto.
Okay, all right, well... before we just move off the topic of Warrington and you watching them, Gary, I'll ask you, who's your favourite Warrington player? I mean, if there's one player that you could pick out of that side, take it over to Salford, who would it be?
Stephen Ratchford.
Oh, he's sticking with him, is he?
Looking at other club chairmen, CEOs and things like that, and I'm going to include Warrington in this, Leeds, Saints, Wigan, Hull, maybe Warrington, hold too much sway in terms of decision-making.
Wouldn't necessarily say too much sway in decision making, because at the end of the day, they have to report to Super League and the RFL, so they can say what they think, certainly, and it's then up to the people in charge to decide whether to go with the clubs or not.
If they then say something to the RFL, are the RFL competent, or did, I know he's not there anymore, or did Nigel Wood just sit back and take 600 grand a year for doing a mediocre job?
I mean, there's a lot made of the RFL being very, very, basically not up to the job, but they do a lot. Basically, everything they do is for the good of the game. Whether it works out or not, that time only tells, but everything they do is with the best of intentions. As far as I know, nothing has been done with bad intentions.
Are they strong enough to stand up to Gary Heverington and Lenehan and McManus? Are the RFL strong enough to stand up to them guys?
I don't know whether they have to be strong enough to stand up to them. They can sort of take opinions on board and go from the broad range of opinions and take the consensus. For me, consensus is the way forward, particularly with the way what we're going through at the moment. Consensus is the way forward in terms of when do we restart? Do we restart at all? What about the Cup? What about the Ashes series? I mean, consensus is the way to go. I mean, people have opinions. I mean, Gary Heatherington was very forthright in his opinions the other day, but whether he gets exactly what he wants or not, it's all down to consensus at the end of the day, because the simple answer is no one actually knows what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. We had a young journalist on the show last season. I think what was his name? Was it Garrett Walker or was it Garrett
Walker?
Gaz Walker, or young lad anyway. He was a bit nervous, and the podcast was a bit too big for Gareth. But one thing he did say, was that out of all the sort of CEOs, Carl Fitzpatrick is the one that chases him. He's looking for those headlines in the paper. Do you find that with Carl? Is he one of the ones that's sort of the go-getter? He's out there trying to make things happen?
Yeah, Carl is very much a go. Well, if you're going to do something, do it yourself. I mean, I get texts off Carl quite a lot saying, oh, can you do this? Have you seen this? Have you seen that? I mean, it's very, very good. I mean, there are some CEOs where you just don't even bother ringing because you know you're not going to get anything from them. Whereas Carl's the exact opposite. And I actually know Carl a bit from his days, again, at Salford. So,
are you sure he's texting you, Gary? Because we've seen his phone. He was on our podcast and he sent us a video on this shitty Nokia phone that looks like it's about 20 years. Are you telling me he's got a different phone than the one he's given the What With Brian Bevan crew?
I don't know whether it's a different one, but he definitely texts me on it. You can text off Nokia phones, so...
Yeah, it's obviously his burner phone, isn't it?
As long as he's turned that bloody thing off where you hit the key and it clicks every time, that annoys me like anything.
Oh, dear, to get the ticking going. Okay, it's on to Ben Curry's Meal for One Isolation Curry of the Week. Last week, we downgraded him to a coronation chicken, Sam, based on the fact there was no rugby league. But prior to this, he was right up there in the high spices when it came to an Indian meal. Curry of the Week, what have you got for us this week, Sam?
Well, I've been getting withdrawal symptoms from Ben because obviously I've not seen Ben play for a couple of weeks, but courtesy of the BBC, they came to my rescue with Challenge Cup Classic highlights today, and Big Ben scorching in from 30 metres in 2016.
And dropping obviously, the ball.
Obviously, they then showed him the Houghton tackle, but it was interesting watching that game back. And things to take note, everyone talks about the Houghton tackle, but nobody seemed to mention that Gidley missed a kick from in front of the posts from 30 metres out, and Sandow's defence on both Hull's tries was atrocious.
So What's this got to do with Ben Curry's Curry of the Week?
I'm still rating Ben on his 30 metre try down the sideline, outpacing Shaw to score in the corner. So he's still up there for me.
That is basically a jar of Thai green curry.
And today's isolation takeaway curry dish is Thai green curry.
Mr. Sankey, you want send lady boy a slushy?
What is that?
Something about Sam ordering a ladyboy. Okay, last week, even with no Warrington game, Sam had the audacity to run online gaming stats to pep up his erotic fantasy statistics of Ben Curry. I'm starting to think it's only a matter of time before Sam goes the whole hog and orders himself a virtual reality Curry love droid. I'd pay good money to watch. It's over to Sam Statistics.
Statistics, caveats, bollocks. Listen up, you norms, it's time for Sam to talk shite. For 5 minutes. It's Sam Sankey's twat stats. No. Shitistics. No. Statistics. Yes. Statistics. Yes. It's time for Sam Sankey's statistics.
I still really want a new jingle, boys. I want a new jingle, but some real sport this week to report on. I'm surprised I've not seen this in Gary's column in the Sun, but some rugby-related golf this week. So the golf challenge and keep you up is for golf. It's bounce the golf ball on one of your golf clubs and Libres manage 15 before losing control. So that was a solid effort. He then went on his Twitter feed to Richie Mathers, a poor effort from Richie Mathers. He had two goes, but could only manage to keep the ball up four goes. And third, ex-Grappenall, Lancashire and England cricketer Neil Fairbrother.
Oh, my brother ran Fairbrother out at Lim School, yeah. Lim Utrington, so well, he ran him out for one.
Well, if you may remember, Neil was a left-handed, flamboyant cricketer, putting him through the covers. But interestingly, he used his right hand for this challenge and kept the ball up for 12 times. So I think that's a win for Libreers. So statistically,
south of the river, this, isn't it? Hey?
Yeah, statistically, sweet Libreers.
Who wants to bet me 50 quid that I can do 25 and I'll send it through as a video in about half an hour?
Go on then, we'll do that.
Any takers?
Yeah, I'll take you that.
Easy money.
Okay. So next, on to some rugby-related athletics. It's just over a week ago now, Kevin Sinfield did his marathon for State of Mind. He raised he raised several hundred thousand pounds for charity, but he ran the marathon in 3 hours, 18 minutes. Now, statistically, if he'd have done that at London last year, that would have put him somewhere between 3,900 and 4,000 in the finishes of 25,000 male competitors.
That's so a good stat. That's a good stat, Sam.
Absolutely riveting.
I'm going to finish with a stat you're going to love.
Not like your other shit ones, then.
Yeah, I hope he's listening. Fan of the podcast, Dave Birch. Dave does quite a bit of running. Dave's run last weekend, 30 minutes and 10 seconds for 5K. He ran actually 30 minutes and about 50 seconds for just over 5K, but I split it down. And if you split that down, 30 minutes and 10 seconds is 1,810 seconds. Or if you were running a 5,000 metres, that's 144 seconds per lap. Mo Farah...
Hold on, Sam. Just on that, though, he's since been arrested, has he, for being out?
No. He's still running. But Mo Farah in the London 2012 final for 5K ran 13 minutes, 41 seconds. And that breaks down to 65 seconds a lap. So basically, Mo would have lapped Dave before Dave finished his first lap of the 5,000 metres. So come on, Dave, pick up the pace, pull your finger out and get moving. That's this week's statistic.
Jeez, we really are. Bottom of the barrel, this is where we're getting to. Right, you can tell there's no rugby league.
Remain indoors.
You are now listening to the Rugby League Emergency Broadcast System.
Welcome back to the Warrington Wolves Isolation News, reporting every week on what the players of the Warrington Wolves have been getting up to. Our supercomputer, Lottie, will analyze the web and social media activities each week and randomly select a player and isolation activity for the podcast to analyze. So, without further ado, Lottie, let's plot those dots from those wire clots. And the results are in. It's Darryl Clark on his cycle machine.
Time for Dennis's new section that premiered on last week's podcast, where we select a player randomly through the What Bev and Lottie computer to see the psychological mindset of the Wire player through their very own Instagram account. Dennis?
Sorry, this has been labelled as my new section. I have no... What do you know about Darryl Clark, Gary?
I know he's a bloody good player. He actually lived round the back of Castleford's ground, and I was at his England... Can't remember whether it's England debut or not against Samoa at Brisbane, and he scored with his first touch.
Okay. And have you had the pleasure of interviewing him?
Yeah, he's a good to talk to, Darryl. Yeah, no, he's a really, really good lad. There's no denying where he's from, with his accent. He's certainly from Yorkshire, but he actually said he lived. Do you know the stand where the big screen is at Castleford?
Yeah.
You know, there's a railway behind there.
The railway behind it, yeah.
If you go behind there, there's a housing estate. And Darryl's from there.
So this is what it's come down to. We've got Sam talking about Dave Birch's jogs and Gary coming up with where Darryl Clark lives.
But when you go into Castleford, you get to that level crossing, you must have to turn right there to get to Darryl Clark's old house.
Listen, anyway, I've noticed this week Darryl Clark he's been getting a bit frustrated with this lockdown, and he's turned to his Watt bike, if you notice, on his Instagram. And a couple of things I'd just like to point out, and I did pick up on this on his Instagram video. Firstly, he's not putting his feet in the foot pedals. If you notice, straps are under his trainers. And what he's neglecting there is the fact that he's not exercising all the muscles as he's cycling. He should be pulling up as well.
See an ankle injury coming on when he gets back onto the pitch, then? Is this a first?
Yeah. It could be something like that, that he's not exercising all the right muscles. But the other point about that video is he didn't have the seat at the right height either. Again, being a keen cyclist, Sam?
Well, I can say maybe we should get hold of a few clips of Chris Froome and Geraint Thomas training and send them to Darryl.
It's a Darryl Quark. I'll get on to that straight away. His new name now. Just come up with that today. Well, and then the final bit is you shouldn't hold your phone in the right hand while you're cycling. That's just bloody dangerous.
Mm. Yeah. True. You know that his ancestry is part of the Clark shoe family, which was founded by Cyrus and James Clark down near you, Dennis, at Street. Only down the road from you, Street, isn't it? It's only down the street to Street.
It's 4 miles away. And you know what? When you're writing a story, Gary, when you've got a bit of an inkling about something, do you sensor check and check your background facts before you come out with a statement, just like he has there?
No, I do always check, and I always find the worst people to come out with stats about players are the players themselves. In rugby league and football, 9 times out of 10, if a player tells you this is my 150th or whatever, it'll be his 148th. It's not.
195 years ago since Clark's came along. I had a look into based on his psychological aspects that you've mentioned there, Dennis, that he seems to be on the edge. Did you know that Clark's invented the Orinoco sole, the Brinkley buckle, the Foxwell top brogue, the botanic poppy, and the Banwell lace? But he is the hero of our team, isn't he? I think.
Yeah.
They also invented the hero boot, the hero slacks, and the best one, the hero strap-on. I think we're only a week away from seeing our hero wearing a strap-on.
Yeah, dear. Well, I can tell you another fact about it as well, is that they were all... I forgot. Those people who don't drink. Quakers. The Clark family were Quakers, and there's no pubs in Street.
That's really?
A little fact.
Oh, dear.
Didn't have to look on Google for that either.
Do you know the Quakers? The Quakers were some of the people who were real pioneers in chocolate. Both Cadbury's and Roundtree were Quakers. And they saw that chocolate was something to was the pleasure instead of alcohol. Just saying.
The thing is, Gary, is that we're really struggling for like some audience now. So we're going for the Quaker audience.
Clearly, Sam's been listening to the You're Dead to Me BBC Historian podcast.
That's exactly. We should do that too.
Well, I may have listened to that one a few days ago. Okay, it's on to the Twitter vote. This week's vote was, again, we've got no rugby league. So we went for which Warrington person would you most like to see to be stuck in isolation with? We had four options: A, Simon Moran; B, Carl Fitzpatrick; C, Steve Price; and D, Debbie from Accounts. Debbie from Accounts won 73%. All you sexist pigs out there who voted for Debbie. Steve Price got 10. Carl only got 4. And Simon Moran got 13. Gary, have you ever interviewed Simon Moran?
No, I have asked. Simon's very, very quiet. He doesn't really do interviews, to be honest with you. He randomly, I don't know whether he still does it, he used to always pitch up in the press room for the press conferences after. And he'd just sit there, he just sort of sat there thinking, is that Simon Moran? Doesn't he own the place? But if you ask him to say anything, he'll pretty much say no every time. He just wants to do what he does and not shout up from the rooftops from it. And it's working all right, I think.
It was only a couple of years ago that he stopped standing in the south stand and moved to the north to sit down.
Filling all this time in isolation, it's pretty hard, isn't it? I mean, the other day I was that bored. I went onto YouTube to sort of look through old sort of chat shows, and I came across a surprise on the Generation Game.
Nice to see you, nice. Now take the sliding doors away. Let's see what we've got behind them. So you've got 45 seconds, Steve. You're in the final. 45 seconds to just name everything that you see, and those prizes will be yours. Start the clock.
And on the conveyor belt tonight, an oil lamp, a floral encasement, a stone flagon of wine, rosé, a soda siphon and an ice bucket, a cuddly dog, a wall clock, a fan heater, binoculars, an electric tea maker and timer, a tennis game, a rather rude picture, ladies' makeup, a sun lamp, a carpet, a microscope outfit, salad bowl and servers, coffee set, collection of children's annuals.
Right, well, there we have it, Steve. So come round the front, keep thinking all the time. Now you've got 45 seconds to tell me what there is there, and you can take it all home. Start the clock.
The floral encasement.
Oh, good start, Steve.
The grog.
The rosé wine, that's right.
The soda stream with the ice bucket.
There'll be no ice for you this year.
Wolfie. There was definitely a Wolfie.
There was a cuddly dog.
A prop forward.
No prop forward, Steve.
The stop clock.
The wool clock, yes.
Or that thing that Tyrone Roberts keep having in the dressing room.
The fan heater.
That's the one. Binoculars.
You didn't see it coming, did you?
The players group. Was there a players group?
No, stop saying the players group.
Oh, the thing you make tea with.
Tea's made?
No, my wife does that.
Oh, okay, right, carry on.
A prop forward.
No prop forward, Steve.
Badminton. Was there a badminton?
It was a tennis set, Steve.
A centre with a bit of pipe.
No chance of that, Steve.
Oh, the Sheila with the big tits.
The rude picture, yes.
That stuff that women put on their face.
Makeup, Steve, makeup, yeah.
Resilience?
No resilience, Steve.
Was the Toby King and Deck pattern?
Now, you've already mentioned the big pair of tits.
Oh, a sat-nav. I could really do with a sat-nav.
This is 1973, Steve.
A prop forward?
Stop fucking saying the prop forward.
A microscope.
Well, you might
need that stuff the girls eat. The green shit.
You mean salad? Don't be sexist, Steve.
Oh, is that the hooter?
Shut up, Steve. Shut up.
Anything, lads? Anything on that sound?
I was just interested. watching the Bruce Forsyth generation game or the Larry Grayson
version. Of course,
version.
That was Bruce Forsyth. Who do you think? It wasn't bloody Larry Grayson.
I thought Chris Packham was back. I'll be honest. It did sound like Chris Packham. Just out of interest then, Gary, because obviously you must have been listening to it a few times yourself. You thought it was that good. Can you name any of the items that went on the conveyor belt?
There was a cuddly tie.
I see. He's no idea.
Not a clue.
It's time for a new section to the show. Well, I say new. We've just rebudged it. Yes, wait for it. It's time for... It's coming. Yes, here it is. Lockdown. I said lockdown. Yes, lockdown. Lockdown letters. Emails. Texts. Tweets. Twitches. MySpace. Bebo. Friends reunite. Those wankers that write on walls in toilets. You know the ones. Put little dicks on the walls with a sort of hole. It turns out to be a glory hole if you stick your cock through it. Not that I'd know that. Anyway, it's time for Lockdown Letters.
Okay, let's move on then. It's time for Lockdown Letters. We've had an excellent selection of letters in lockdown this week. We'll just read them out in no particular order. We had an email in from Marcus O'Gramby. He said, we've run out of toilet roll in our house, so I've started using old Warrington Rugby League programmes. This afternoon, a picture of Dwayne Mann took the full brunt of my morning fry-up. Which is nice. Yeah,
Jesus.
Mike Philippoussis, based on the fact there's no wire games, should the podcast production consider moving Mr. Sankey to furlough leave?
Yes, please.
Yeah. That's, I mean,
I don't get paid anything, so 80% of nothing is just the same.
Another one. I saw Mrs. Widdop. This is based on the fact that we always try and a section on the podcast, Gary, where we look at players and what they're eating. This one comes in. I saw Mrs. Widdop eating a lean cuisine on her lap while she was watching The Chase. I'm not sure if she followed it up with a pudding because she drew the curtains. That's from Eric the Pervert. here we go. Dave Munro's written in again, lads. Here we go. Let's be honest. Isolation isn't a burden for me as I despise the general public. If anything, it's given me more time to spend alone with my life-size cardboard cutout of Carl Fitzpatrick. I'm just relieved with all this solitude. I made the wise decision of laminating him first. Oh, dear. Dave. Lisa Leaflet, I was pleased to hear Dennis was a fan of Des Drummond. She says, I once squeezed his bottom in Evergreen's nightclub. It was firmer than the Elgin marbles, unlike my husband's that's softer than a Battenberg cake mix. She then goes on to say, however, I'd like to add, my husband has always been loving towards me and he supported the family financially. So that's nice of Lisa.
That's very good.
One from Wayne and Vicky. We've dusted off all our old board games. We've tried to play board game Operation, but the man's red nose wasn't lighting up. Thankfully, we had a couple of blue and yellow LEDs in the garage. So now when you try and remove the little man's anatomy, he lights up primrose and blue.
Very nice.
Dear. A few more. Jill Marston. My husband obeys all my rules. He's piss scared of me. The secret to getting on top of him early each morning, and I think that's metaphorically, not literally, he's just telling him what to do. With you having Gary on the podcast, could you ask him, please, what refereeing rule he'd love to see the Super League referees imposing more?
For me, I'm going to sound like stereotypically, play the balls.
Yes.
Play the ball with the foot. So no. I remember I was always at school. I was always told off for not playing the ball with the foot.
A couple of years ago, Gary, it was on Facebook, but they streamed I don't know what the Great Britain team would be called. It was the junior side that came out to play the Australian schoolboys.
Yeah, England Academy it would have been.
And they had the referees wired up. And at half time, the picture just went to a sort of static, you know, well, it wasn't static picture, it was a picture just at the halfway line. And you could hear the referees having a conversation in the, they hadn't turned the mics off. And the two lines people were saying, England aren't playing the ball. They're just not putting the foot on the ball. And the referee said, yeah, they've done it from the start. Let's just ignore it and just play the game. Otherwise, I'm going to blow up every time.
Yeah.
This year they were meant to be stamping down it. I can't remember a single penalty for not playing the ball correctly.
Oh no, I have seen a couple. Definitely seen a couple this year.
Hang on, Gary, a couple out of perhaps 2,000 play the balls.
Yeah, but to be fair, if you blew up at every play the ball, we'd still be at the first game of the season.
It did soon start playing the ball with a foot.
Well, no, they wouldn't, because the first game of the season would still be going on now 4 months later.
Yes, very good.
One in from Bryony Black and Decker. Is Gary Carter related to the comedian Daniel Kitson? Any relation to Daniel? Daniel is a bit of a looker for Daniel Kitson. I mean, Daniel Kitson is, Gary, but yeah, there's something there.
Well, I can pretty much say no.
Okay. One in from some bloke called Gareth Walker. Carter's always fancied himself as a prop. However, I had him eating out of my hand in the infamous Lancashire versus Yorkshire media game in 2005. Sorry. Can you explain this, Gary? What happened? You were at prop. Obviously, Walker got the better of you.
We played a press game between Yorkshire media and Lancashire media about 12 years ago. And Ashley Klein refereed it at the time, who's now one of the top officials at the NRL. He had a nightmare then as well. But if anyone ever saw me, they go, "Yep, there's a prop," but not very good one, I must admit. But to be honest, Gareth's probably not lying in his point there. He probably did have me. But after Lancashire were winning by loads, but then Yorkshire brought on this sudden recruit to the Yorkshire media ranks, who basically blitzed everyone. But Lancashire held on for a 2-point win.
Very nice. All right, and a last one from David Hike wants to ask Gary what he thinks makes a good partnership, and does he think Widdop and Austin are the best pair in Super League?
Widdop and Austin individually probably be one of the best in Super League, but there's a lot more needed to become a partnership in a pair of halves. Like, take Salford last year, Jackson did a lot of the finishing stuff, but when he came to, he did a lot of the setting up. I mean, if you look at it, it'll take time. I mean, Widdop's always been a controlling half, a organiser and things like that, whereas Austin's been a bit more, see a chance to take it, go for it. But it'll take time for them two to settle in. But if they do blend as they should do, they could potentially be the best partnership in Super League, yeah.
Do you think possibly that, I mean, Widdop and Austin have both come from backgrounds where they haven't necessarily been the star performer in the team? I mean, you look at Widdop, I mean, he was in that Melbourne team. It was just unbelievable side. And then even at St. George, they've had these fabulous players coming through. Do you think that sort of directive now that he has to do a little bit more, put the onus on him, is something that's possibly he's not quite fitting in with yet?
Well, he was captain at St. George, so there was a lot sort of expected of him then. He did produce, to be fair, but I can see where you're coming from in that, particularly Melbourne, he was a fullback at Melbourne, and he was a certain Billy Slater in his way at Melbourne, so he didn't get much game time. But it's an interesting, I mean, again, Widdop, even though he is English, he is playing in a place he's never played professionally before.
Yeah.
So just getting used to the conditions and the way things work over here, it's all new to him, even though he is English.
Someone who is used to the conditions, and that's you, Gary. And your lovely other half, Gemma, makes up a wonderful partnership. The secret to your partnership, I guess, is knowing each other inside and out. So we contacted Gemma earlier this week. Gemma has very kindly done a little game of Mr. and Mrs. for us. Oh, so we've got some questions for you now, Gary. Question one, what was the first film you ever saw together?
First film we ever saw together.
Now, can I just point out, she actually, when she told us this, she said he will never get it.
See, I'm not a massive film watcher. I'm not. First film we ever watched together.
Do you know what? I can remember every line in the first film I watched with my darling other half. I mean, just...
yeah, but to be fair to Gary, has he not already got that right?
to be fair, he's got two-thirds of the answer right, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Do you want to have a bit of a bit of a guess, Gary? There's a nice statue in the middle of Warrington that sort of is themed around this film.
You definitely want to establish in Wonderland together.
Yes, you got there in the end, mate. Good on. It was Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland. Yeah. There you go. You see, I see, Gemma, he did get there in the end. Okay, question two, a bit easier for you because this is a multiple choice. What's the first thing Gemma does when she wakes up in the morning? A, turns over in bed, kissing you gently, and then giving the country's leading rugby league journalist a jolly good scene to. I think she means you, not Brian Carney. Just made that right. B, goes to the loo. C, she jumps out of bed and exercises. Or D, half awake, grumbles something and looks at her phone.
D.
Yes. I think that's what we all do, isn't it? Okay, number three. Where did you and Gemma go on your first date?
Now, she'll probably say,
we went to,
I remember taking her to a Bradford game when I was working to show how it works and everything.
Is that a date?
Well, no, I don't think it was an official date. Well, it wasn't for me anyway. It was just so general, basically what happens at work, and that work is nowhere near as glamorous as it sounds.
Well, she said that you went to to Wembley to watch Stockport County versus
Rochdale. Yeah, Stockport v Rochdale. Yeah, yeah.
Her words, not the podcast. She said it rained, it was cold, and it was shit. They were her words.
It was cold. I'll tell you why. You know, the only archway at Wembley, the row we were in was exactly where the big drops of water were dropping off.
Oh dear. Well, your first actual date was a curry, Gary, apparently.
Yes, it was.
Which Super League personality would Gemma most like to share a hot tub with? A, Sonny Bill Williams. B, Ben Murdoch Masilla. C, Barry McDermott. Or D, Ian Watson?
Oh, dear.
She's obviously kept this a secret from me.
Yeah.
Down to two. I'd probably say D.
Ooh.
Barry McDermott, ooh. Was that Barry McDermott?
Ian Watson.
I'm sorry, Gary. It was Barry McDermott. You might want to have a word later. Yeah. She said, in terms of a rugby league player, she'd go for Sonny Bill Williams in the hot tub. But personality, she said first, would be Barry McDermott. Okay. What perfume does Gemma wear? Again, it's multiple choice. Is it A, Vera Wang? B, Izzy Miyake, C, Joe Malone, or D, Old Spice?
C.
It is. No. She said you'd have to go and check.
No.
C. Very good. Which body part of Gary is your favourite part? We asked Gemma this question. What do you think she said?
Which body part of mine is Gemma's favourite?
Yeah.
Which body part of mine is Gemma's favourite?
Headline news tomorrow.
Because it's probably not a body part at all, it's probably the wall, which means you don't have to look at me.
Uber, you're not far off. She just actually laughed, Gary. That was her answer.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Okay, another multiple choice. What's Gemma's favourite movie? A, Back to the Future 1. B, Back to the Future 2. C, Back to the Future 3. Or D, wait for it, Back to the Future 4.
B.
Spot on. You see, I tell you what, Widdop and Austin could go a long way if they sort of met Gemma and Gary. He's doing pretty well here. If Gemma could take one thing to a desert island, what would it be?
Is a phone allowed as an answer?
I'm not sure. We'd have to check the rules of desert island discs, wouldn't we? But she actually said, mate, and this is fair to it, she said she would, if she couldn't take you, which is lovely of her, she'd take some music. However, she then went on to say that she'd take an 80s and 90s mixtape, including Ace of Base. Based around that, I'm not sure taking you is that wonderful, Gary, to be honest. Number nine, what does Gemma believe is your most annoying habit? I'll repeat that question to you, Gary. Here's a clue. What does Gemma believe is your most annoying habit?
repeating questions when I'm asked questions.
You don't listen, mate. You're just not listening, apparently, according to Gemma. She said, you're just not listening.
Oh, dear. It's turned into marriage counselling, hasn't it, this?
I know.
Question 11, only a few more to go. What are you most likely to argue about?
Me not listening.
Three.
Yeah, you see, you're learning. Well done. That's good. Question 11, we've got three more to go. Does Gemma put her milk in her tea first or last?
Last.
Yes, you see. Well, see, I think the relationship's here to be saved. This one's a bit of a tricky one. Who said I love you first?
Gemma.
She did. What a bastard, eh? What a bastard. Unbelievable. And the last one, what's Gemma's favourite dessert? Oh, no, sorry, what's Gemma's favourite dessert? A, sticky toffee pudding with custard. B, roly-poly pudding with custard. C, chocolate brownie with custard. Or D, a bowl of custard.
B.
I tell you what, I reckon we've found the best half-pack partnership in the country in these two.
Not bad at all.
Just for the record, Dennis, what is your favourite dessert?
It's probably tiramisu.
What, not the Sahara? I said desert, not dessert.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, with great trepidation, it's time to move on to the next section. Although based on Dennis deciding the only way forward in tackle bags last week was to suggest we all take to a Keep Fit video from a freak that uses toilet rolls, it's anyone's guess to know if we'll be wiping the crack this week. It's time for Dennis's Tackle Roll Tackle Bags.
Tackle bags.
You're joking. Not another one? Oh, for God's sake, I can't stand this.
Right, okay. Well, last week we did the new lockdown section, this now, because I'm really scraping the barrel already for this section. But I was looking at basically what players do during the, this lockdown, what they do with themselves and so on. And there's quite a lot floating around. And last week I looked at exercise videos, picked out a chap who was doing exercise videos with loo roll. Obviously, that's quite topical. Well, the response wasn't that great. I did actually recommend the guy doing it with a loo roll, but nobody really sort of thought it was a good idea. Don't know why that was. Do you know why that was, Rob?
Sorry, I'm not listening.
Oh, okay. The response was pretty shit, as you could imagine. 95% said no, it wasn't a good idea that the players should be doing this loo roll exercise. I had one particular response off pessimistic Keith, the architect. Stupid. This is exactly why I avoid fitness videos. Next, it will be a bloke with kitchen roll. Well, the good thing is that the progression from, bog roll to kitchen roll is that in the response in 4%, Icarus Wax Benefits, he said, I like it. I've progressed to kitchen roll. So this is how good it is. We're actually evolving this video thing as within, the limits of tackle bags. 1% other portmonger, can you put your cock in it? That was what he said. There's always someone in a lockdown. Anyway. Right. This week. What are you putting your hand in your head for, Sam? This week, I'm going to look at board games because, evidently everyone is getting bored. The mundane monotony of getting up, eating, drinking, and generally arsing around on social media, which is a lot of people doing. I want to change the tack to this. So we want to say goodbye to being bored and prepare yourself for the new board game revolution.
Ooh.
We need to play a big drum roll.
Oh, you'll be to play.
No. We need to play a big drum roll.
I'll play a big drum roll, right? Yeah. Okay.
My idea is for the Wat Bevan Rugby League board game. Okay. So this isn't boring. This is a new board game. So essentially, this board game, a bit like the Sabutio thing, and a bit of the How's That? Do you remember How's That?
How was that? Oh, yeah, Rob, do you remember How Was That? You had that, didn't you?
I had the electronic version.
Test match. Oh, was it called Owsat or Test match? Yeah. I can't remember.
Oh, you mean Owsat as in the cricket game with the two little things you roll.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
It was like an octagonal Green Bay's, wasn't it?
Sorry, I thought you meant Guess Who.
Imagine a Sabutio playing field. You've got your players on there. What you do is you roll a die. You notice how I said die there. Die each. And you've got an offense die and a defense die. And on the offense die, you've got a bust tackle plus 15 meters, dummy half run plus 10 meters. Surrender tackle 5 meters, handoff 10 meters, centre break 20 meters, wing break 25 meters. So you roll this.
You get quite big yardage every time, don't you? Just off one play of the ball here, Dennis.
Right. So the defensive team have a die, and that's got dominant minus 15 meters, held minus 5 meters, hospital pass minus 10 meters, missed tackle 0 meters, and you take that off the offensive.
Yes,
gives you progression on the pitch.
Should we be recording this? We don't want this to go out. Surely we need to paint.
No, we don't really want it to go out. This is class. So anyway, you work your way down the pitch, but
Gary's going to want his cut on this as well. It's going to go four ways.
So anyway, you get to the fifth tackle. Then what you do is you have the action play dice, and this is where you then roll like
dice or die.
Die. Yeah, this is a die, this one. Yeah, you're right. You've got grubber kick, high kick, long pass, or rampage, right?
Oh.
And then in defence, what did I write?
What's a rampage? I've never ever heard playing rugby league on, they've just gone for a rampage.
It's when you run it on the fifth tackle.
Is it?
Wildebeest.
Yes. Come on. Fuck's sake. Right. Anyway, so when you roll these dice, you then once you've like selected grubber, you then pick up. Then you pick up a card.
Hold it together, Dennis. Hold it together.
Then you lost that bit.
Dear, where are your die?
Up my ass. Oh yeah, I've got it. Then you pick up a card if you write grubber. And then the card says you move the ball to the end goal area. Then you can flick your player nearest the ball. And then that would be
we've got
try.
Players. So it's not just a dice or a die. We've now back to the players, are we?
You've got the Sabutio bit and the bits on there. I've lost Gary already. Look at him. You know what, rubbing
Dennis?
His eyes. Oh,
no. You know how for the last 5 or 6 years, the Sun at some point has always had go to France for a pound on the banner headline. In a couple of weeks' time, it's going to be free rugby league game for every reader. I can see this. He's writing it down. He's taking it off.
Listen, right, I know it's in its early days and I've got a bit more work to do. The idea is the What Bevin board game is the future of the lockdown sort of boredom.
It's going to be a corporation board game any time now.
Yeah. So anyway, I will finalise the rules and everything. And if you think that's a great idea, because obviously you guys do and you're all wanting a percentage of my take on this one, then write to us at What Bevin and we'll see if we can put you on the list. Probably priced $25.99. Leave it at that.
Do you have a favourite board game, Gary? Anything that you particularly like to play?
If I had a board game, probably Trivial Pursuit, to be honest.
I'm a bit of a
sucker for a quiz, to be honest.
Are you one of these people that goes and read all the questions and answers first before you play? Take them to the bath or something? Oh, right.
No, definitely not.
Gary, are you an Only Connect fan like two of us, two out of the three of us on the podcast?
I feel far cleverer when I get a question right in Only Connect than I do when I get one right in University Challenge.
It's funny you should say this, Gary, because last year, what would Brian Bevan say? Entered Only Connect and filled out the application form and had a place ready for the trial show before it goes to air, which is down in Cardiff. Yeah. Unfortunately, Sam Sankey didn't want to go to air, so we had to be pulled from the show. So now we know you can stand in for us, Gary. That's great. We'll fill it out next year again.
I got stage fright of meeting Victoria.
Oh, dear. My favourite board game was Colditz. Do you ever remember Escape from Colditz? That was a belter, wasn't it? Eh? Nerves of steel for that one, apparently. Okay, fair enough. Okay, right, let's move on then. It's time for, with the government imposing a lockdown, Madam Boyd has reluctantly closed her chip shop and the no vacancy sign up has gone up in her B&B, with her only long-term resident, Major Nobby, in residence now. One thing you'll never be able to lock down is our darling clairvoyant, though, is her balls. Dennis put in his call to our podcast sweetheart to see how her balls are coping, and it seems they're in good hands.
Hello, this is you on the control tower. Do you want number 77?
Good evening. Madam Boyd speaking.
Oh, are you all right, Madam Boyd?
I'm hunkered down, Dennis. I'm quite comfortable in my boudoir, sat between my cushions.
Oh, have you got nice soft velvet cushions, sir?
No, I'm sat in such a way it doesn't aggravate my hemorrhoids, dear.
Lovely. Have you been keeping yourself busy, Madam Boyd?
Yes, dear. Me and my friend Brian have been playing one of my favourite games, Top Trumps.
Excellent choice. What category have you got?
Cunts, dear.
Sorry?
The category is famous cunts.
I could think of a few of them.
Indeed, dear. My favourite count is Count Dracula.
Oh, counts. Right, got you.
Whatever were you thinking, boy?
Anyway, Madam Boyd, if we could have your prediction, please, that'd be great.
Brian, darling. Brian.
Oh, hey, oh. Still got Count Brian there, then.
Well, there's no need to be like that about him.
No, never mind.
Take the time with the balls, dear. Go gently.
Oh, look at them babies.
Don't get too excited, dear. We have guests.
I wanted to be a musician, but I can't even play the triangle.
Well, you seem to know your way around this triangle, Brian. Ooh, my goodness.
All right, yeah, baby.
Okay, that'll do for now, Brian. Thank you. Yes, let me see. Ah, I see two heads. Yes, two heads merging into one. There'll be Hellstone and Grimmer to pay, with a new face on the way.
I'll have to ask the boys what that's all about. Anyway, thanks very much, Madam Boyd. I'll hopefully speak to you next week.
Come on, Brian. Grab my balls.
They're the two biggest movers of emotion on the planet.
Indeed, aren't you?
I'm a lucky guy.
Well, play your cards right, Brian, and I'll show you a little more.
But I think Fanny's an outstanding establishment.
Yes. Okay, dear. Keep your voice down. Keep your voice down, dear.
If you wish to leave a record of your call, please state your message at the sound of the tone.
Now, out of this, quite clearly, and all this lockdown and everything, I'd be interested to understand your take on it. But I think there's always some good that comes out of the bad. And I think that out of this, we could end up with just one governing body for rugby league. What do you think?
Certainly possible. I mean, the way things have gone recently, certainly publicly, I mean, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. It's certainly publicly been led by the RFL, so be interested to see if what Ralph has done, if it works and the government come up with money, then I think Super League clubs will be a lot more likely to sort of move back towards the RFL rather than sort of going their own way. So I think the next couple of weeks will be key really in that, just to see if what Ralph has done actually works, if the government come up with any money for them.
Who do you think, who would you put your faith in then, Gary? Would it be Robert Elston or would it be Ralph Rimmer?
Ralph Rimmer.
Would it? Why?
Because, I mean, certainly the last few weeks he's certainly publicly led, he's been the voice that's tried to guide the whole game through.
Yeah.
And for him, it's like, the top of Super League is the bottom of League One is as important as the top of Super League. And I think, given the situation at the moment, a collective thing is far better than sort of people going their own way and doing what's good for one part of it. Whereas whole game solutions needed for me over the next couple of weeks through what's going on.
So going back, it really goes back to what you said earlier really, when I asked you, you feel perhaps Ralph Rimmer has a more holistic view of the game of rugby league, or the RFL have a more holistic view, whereas Super League are interested in Super League?
At the moment, I mean, at the moment, it certainly appears that way. And for me, at the minute, that's what's needed, a holistic view, because, I mean, there'll be a lot of clubs in League One will be bricking it, basically. They're not going to survive this. Whereas, certainly, some Super League clubs will be all right through it, because they've got the wealthy backers that can, if needed, bankroll them through it. So the RFL is sort of taking it on for the whole game, whereas obviously the clues in the title with Super League. Super League, we do it for Super League.
Holistic view is defined as meaning relating to or dealing with... Oh, sorry. So just checking out holistic. I didn't show what that meant. Okay, in the week where we've kind of celebrated 25 years of Super League, here's Daniel to take a look back at what he believes are Warrington's best six moments during the past quarter of a century.
You're the best thing.
Yes, Super League celebrates its 25th anniversary of its first ever season. And so with that in mind, I thought I'd look back at Warrington's six best Super League matches. So in sixth place, I've got Warrington 68, Widnes Vikings 4 at the 2012 Magic Weekend at the Etihad Stadium, home of Manchester City. Joel Monaghan ran in 5 tries that day, while Matty Blythe also got a hat-trick, and there were further tries from Gareth Cavell, Ryan Atkins, Stephen Ratchford and Ben Curry on an unbelievable performance from The Wire under Tony Smith's stewardship at the home of Manchester City. What a performance that was, absolutely demolishing our biggest rivals. In fifth place is a playoff win in 2011 over Huddersfield, 47-0 at the Halliwell Jones. Chris Riley with a hat-trick, Joe Monaghan with 2, Brett Hodgson and Matt King finishing off a lovely flowing team move. That was Tony Smith ball at his absolute finest. Wire were unbelievable that night and really could have gone on and probably should have gone on to win Super League that season. In fourth place, I've got a very, very famous Warrington game, which is Warrington 33, Leeds Rhinos 16 in 2005. And this is famous for one man and one man only. And that man is, of course, Andrew Johns, who made his first of 4 Warrington appearances that night on a very special evening at the Halliwell Jones. Andrew Johns was the best player in the world at the time. I'll always remember Eddie Hemming's commentary as he walked into the stadium. The best player in the world is here at Warrington. Yes, what a night that was. And what a performance Johns put in. He scored 5 goals on his debut. He got an assist, a fantastic break, which set up Logan Swan, second rower at the time. And he also forced Rob Burrow, one of the most dependable players in Super League, to knock on from the kickoff. Johns was unplayable that night, and that's surely one of the most memorable evenings in Warrington Super League history. And that was probably the night when Warrington became a big team, I would say. Third place, I've gone for a pretty recent one, which is St Helens 13, Warrington 18. The semi-final in the 2018 playoffs. Saints were unbelievable all season under Justin Holbrook and had won the league by a country mile, while Warrington were inconsistent but managed to finish 4th. However, it was The Wire who got their place at Old Trafford in the grand final, courtesy of 2 tries from Tom Lynham, including the second one, which sent the away end absolutely ballistic. Danny Richardson had scored 2 drop goals, and it looked like it was going to be another of those difficult nights at St Helens at the totally wicked, but eventually, Wire came through it. I hear CBBC's Mr Tumble had a good night on goalkeeping duty for the Primrose and Blue team that night as well. My runner-up is from 2016, arguably Warrington's most impressive season in Super League. Salford 30, Warrington 31 at the AJ Bell Stadium. Salford led by 30 points to 12 at half-time, but an unbelievable second-half comeback with tries from Ben Curry, Ashton Sims, Ryan Atkins and Jack Hughes, as well as 5 goals from Chris Sander, brought the side level. However, just after the hooter had gone, Matty Russell, with a quick play of the ball, Chris Sandow picks the ball up. He shimmies away from a Salford defender and from more than 40 yards out, fires an unbelievable field goal to send the away end into absolute delirium. A moment from the Magic Man that I will never, ever forget. And in first place, my favourite ever Warrington Super League match is Leeds Rhinos 17, Warrington 18 in 2006 at Headingley. Warrington's first ever playoff victory. Lee Breers with 2 drop goals, including a second one. What a moment that was. Sinfield had got one, Kevin Sinfield, which looked like it was going to spell the end of Warrington's season. Warrington's away form hadn't been great that year, but they turned up to Headingley and put in a beast performance. Ben Westwood with a big try as well, and then Lee Vriers with that clutch drop goal. I don't think anybody who was there will ever forget it. What a night.
Spread the field a little bit more here, not just Warrington, but what's been your favourite moment in 25 years of Super League?
I've got two, to be honest with you, and this is purely as a Salford fan, one of which I wasn't there for, one of which I was there for. The one I wasn't there for was the £1 million game against Hull KR. I was actually at my good mate's wedding that day, and basically, as he walked down the aisle, I was resigned to Salford being relegated. Then they got married at the altar. And I checked my phone and saw what had happened and was like, bloody hell, Salford have stayed up. So that was the one I wasn't there for. The one I was there for was Lee Mossop's try against Wigan last year in the semi-final that sealed Salford getting to the grand final. Because that was the moment you could actually say, Salford are going to the grand final.
And in a moment like that, you're clearly there as a professional capacity with the Sun newspaper. Do you still jump up in the air and get in when that goes in? Or you... No, you don't.
No. Oh.
Not in the press box, no.
Because, what a professional. What a professional.
Well, I got a name drop. I actually said something similar to Kevin Brown. I said, whenever I am neutral, when I speak, I'm a fan. And I was writing then, so I had to be dead set neutral and I couldn't jump up and down. And also, the press box is right in front of the Wigan directors and behind the Wigan fans, so... Right. It would be the best thing in the world to jump up and down at that point.
Oh dear.
Hey, while we're on this subject, Gary, what where's the best place for catering that you've been on?
Warrington's good.
Is it?
No, it is. Warrington really spot on. It always used to be sandwiches, but in the last couple of years, it's been anything.
Lasagna.
Let me guess. Lasagna.
Could be chili. Could be curry. Could be anything.
Every week he goes on about this. Every week he asks people about the catering. He's got a press pass for Warrington, but he never goes to the catering before the match because he's always in the pub, aren't you, Dennis?
He always gets me to buy his alcohol.
Well, you know.
Leeds is good for a feed as well because you basically get a free meal in the cafe bar underneath the stand behind the post. So Leeds is good and... A lot of the time, it's just pie. Salford's all right as well because it can be curry, can be pies, can be anything really. The Willows, you always used to get a tub of like sausage and chips, and you were never quite sure what the meat in the sausages actually was.
No, but you know what, Gary? I used to love the Willows, and maybe not so much for a night match, but when it was a Sunday afternoon game, we used to get there early. Used to be a game on before.
Not when you were curb crawling then in the back streets. No.
you'd watch through the windows, and in fact, I think that was the first time I ever saw Ben Curry play. Was a free match. But I used to love the Willows. Apart from,
you've said it.
If it was a Friday night game and Warrington had won, so you stayed behind to clap the players off, then it was a bit dodgy walking through the streets back to your car. It was a bit dodgy then.
It was a bit dodgy walking through the streets anyway. It was always a relief when you got back to your car and all four windows were intact.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, we've had 25 years of Super League, Gary, but we've got another 25 years ahead of us. Where do you think we'll be in 25 years? Are we going to be across a multicultural, multi-city, wonderful Super League Northern Hemisphere game, or will we just still be Castleford, Wakefield and Warrington?
No, I do think more and more sort of teams from all over... There'll be a couple more in Europe, possibly France. They might even look at setting one up in Paris again because you've got the base with Catalan Toulouse now. So they might move it to a different area of France to try and create a real sort of French atmosphere, really. Yeah. I think, obviously, this is the North American push now and at least one of them will be in Super League as well. And I think you might even see another push towards another of the countries in the UK, like a Welsh team or a Scottish team or an Irish team, a Northern Irish team, maybe one in Belfast. I don't know, but
I can see
I do think you'll see the net spreading a lot more.
And are you in favour of that, Gary? Because I hate to say, and I don't want to sound, you know, a little bit bigoted or, you know, a little bit xenophobic, but I quite like rugby league where it is. Do you think expanding the game is really going to be a success to the game, or it's going to be the end and the demise of the sport?
If, I mean, it's a difficult balancing that with the expansion, is it? I mean, there's a case, sometimes you can be guilty of chucking teams there for the sake of it, but you've also got to do it properly. I mean, look at the way Newcastle are built now. Newcastle are building into a real sort of good, solid club with foundations, whereas you've had clubs in the past that haven't had any foundations. And some will argue till the cows come on that Toronto haven't got any foundations, whereas Toronto will say it takes 20-odd years. The way I'd look at Toronto is look at Melbourne. I think there's only 3 Victorians actually come through and played in the NRL. And how long have Melbourne been around?
The other thing with Melbourne, though, is if you look at the fact of just how much money the NRL has pumped into, I think it's about $200 million or something that they've pumped into Melbourne to keep it going. I just don't know if we can support a team like Toronto going forward unless they have a millionaire in charge.
Well, they have got a millionaire in charge.
Yeah. Is this the end of Salford then? Do you think the demise of Salford in the next 25 years could possibly happen because these big teams come in? I mean, where do you see Salford going? Do they need to become Manchester? Is that possibly where they need to be? No?
No. For me, Salford shouldn't become Manchester. I mean, a lot of people forget that Salford is a city in its own right.
Yeah.
And that Salford, I've always had a thing that Salford should be more of the fact that they're not Manchester.
Right. Go the other way.
I mean, basically what Salford need is someone who's bloody rich coming in. I know the talking bits and bats with a very, very rich Salfordian. As to whether he'll invest or not. I was actually told by another very, very rich Salfordian the other week that if he could buy one club, it would be Salford Red Devils.
Was he pissed?
No, he was deadly serious. He was actually in his workplace at the time, so he wasn't pissed. If he was pissed, he definitely wouldn't put money into Salford. But it's an interesting one with Salford as to where they go, because they clearly got no money. Getting a financial base is the start, but they've also got to, I think they've also lost that bit of that connection with the community of Salford, because the city of Salford is a bloody big place when you think about it. So they've got to connect more with the city and some of the surrounding areas, but focus on the city of Salford more before you start focusing on the surrounding areas.
Okay, that's it, everyone. Just how long we can stretch out this shit is hard to know. Although Matty Russell did manage to stretch out playing 96 games for Warrington, so perhaps we're not done yet. Email to whatbevan@gmail.com, tweet to @whatbevan, or for all you norms out there, you can find us under Brian Bevan at Facebook. So, with the sun setting on the podcast for another week, it's a light fading ta-ra from Sam.
All the best.
He's no sunset, but he's certainly woken up at the crack of dawn from Dennis.
Good seeing you.
And if there's anyone that perfectly shadows the symbolic setting of the sun and the beauty and mystery of life itself, it's a goodbye from our brilliant guest, Gary Carter.
Thanks for listening and see you soon.
And also we should say thank you to Gemma as well. Thanks, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm off to take a look and reminisce at those pictures of me in 1989 with the gorgeous Finnish chick watching the sun go down on the beach in Ibiza. I never did get to see a Balearics. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say?
He only mentioned Salford 24 times.
I know.